know that it is time to join Email Anonymous. You heard of Alcoholics Anonymous? This is Email Anonymous. When you wake up at 3 a.m. to go to the bathroom and stop to check your email on the way back to bed. I've done that. You name your children Eudora, AOL, and .com. You turn off your modem and you get this awful empty feeling as if you just pulled the plug on a loved one. What, someone said that's not funny? It's true. Okay. Okay. You spend half of the plane trip with your laptop on your lap and your child in the overhead compartment. So it's time to join Email Anonymous. You decide to stay in college for an additional year or just two for free internet, just for the free internet access. You find yourself typing com after every period when using a word processor, .com. Oh, this is a good one. This may catch on. You refer to going to the bathroom as downloading. I can see it's going to catch on here. Excuse me, Prabhu, I got to download. Teacher, can I download? You can't call your mother. She doesn't have a modem. You check your mail. It says no new messages. So you check it again. You move into a new house and you decide to Netscape before you landscape. You start tilting your head sideways to smile.
That's so funny.
Okay. You can post it on your bulletin board. I remember once going to a camp, summer camp. Who's from Serbia? So you're from Serbia. Do you ever go to the Pula camps? You went to Pula. Okay, well, that's... Anyway, we had this camp there one year. I think it was... What did Satchinandan give the name of that place where we had the camp?
Brajabas.
No, Brajabas, but it had a natural name. Anyway. They devotees come from all over Slovenia and Serbia and Bosnia and Croatia and the whole area there for a summer camp. And this year there was, or that particular year, there were about 500 devotees. And it's around a lake and everybody camps out and a lot of fun. And then they have a big tent. And now they have many tents. And there were different seminars going on. So under the big tent, Satchinandan Maharaj gave a very wonderful class, seminar on, I don't know, something really spiritual, you know. Yeah. And then I gave a seminar on the seven habits of highly effective Vaishnavas. Oh. So after my class, and in my better days, I was good on stage. You know, I could tell a joke and keep people focused and interested in the material. So after this particular seminar, someone came up to me and he was bubbling over with enthusiasm, and he was saying, "I've always heard that all the gurus are different angas of Prabhupada's personality." He said, "Now I can see Satchinandan Maharaj, he's just like a rose." And he said, "You're just like a businessman." I said, "Gee, thanks." But it is a fact that there is an element to our lives called management. Collectively, that's another thing, but individually, more than ever, we're responsible for becoming the master of our fate or the captain of our destiny. Who knows that poem? Okay. Can you recite it for us? Anyway, we won't get into it. The Rime of the Ancient Mariner. Quite famous classic, but... Uh-oh. Started the wheels moving. It used to be in yesteryear that family members, and I've seen the last remnants, the last vestiges of that culture in India when I went there in 72. There was still something left, and families were very close, and the parents really took a lot of interest to see that all of their byproducts were nicely situated, married and situated in business or whatever it was. And it was not just a business arrangement, but they were very concerned about their children, that they should be nicely set up in the material world so that they could pursue dharma, artha, kama, and ultimately bhakti, moksha is not a good pursuit, but certainly bhakti is the fifth purushartha. But in these times, as Kali progresses, we find more and more that we're responsible for our own lives. And there's no use. I was at a group of, a meeting of Gurukulis in London one year. It was outside Bhaktivedanta Manor. And they had a big campfire, and of course it went on till midnight or later, whether they wanted to or not, but that's what they had to do to show that they were with it. And it was nice, it was nice. And so I wanted to be with them, and so I attended. But I really had a strong feeling that whatever they had been through, good or bad, but we have to take responsibility for our lives, and we should get on with it. And I told a story about something that I had heard from a Major General Rodman. This was at a Bhakta Stephen symposium in Salt Lake City, we used to call him Bhakta Stephen because he was bald too. So anyway. Oh, Stephen Covey, I get shy when I say that name because in the past there's been some criticism, but I don't care. It's still good material. He has a lot of nice books. Mayapur Prabhu, just read this book by his son, Sean, called The Seven Habits of Highly Effective Teenagers, which is really, it's much lighter and full of jokes, but the message is still there that you have to manage your life, manage your time and manage your life. And I'll tell you frankly, they have done lots of studies. Americans like to do studies and quantify everything and create statistics because, you know, the end of statistics is the absolute truth. Well, there was an American, I think it was Mark Twain, who said there are lies, there are damn lies, and then there's statistics, so... Statistics can also lie, but they have done studies on freshmen and fresh women too. or actually, you could say fresh men, because Prabhupada said when asked a question like that, he was talking about men, and someone said, "Well, what about women?" Prabhupada said, "All kinds of men." basically, we're all men. Some are wool men and some are vanilla. But so they studied freshmen and they found that those students who had written goals of what they were going to do with their lives and their education, which amounted to about 3%, a huge 3% of the population of the freshman class. Those 3%, they followed the whole group 20 years down the road. Those 3% did more in their lives than the other 97% put together. So it's always good to know where you're going. Keep a diary, write it down, keep your goals and roles and ambitions and short-term plans and long-term plans. Always good to do that. And so I told this joke to these students, the Gurukulis in London, which Rodman had told. And it wasn't a joke, actually. It was quite a serious point that there's one mayor, there was one mayor in Washington. His name was Marion Barry. And he got elected. Wasn't particularly the most qualified person, but ethnically he had support. And so he got elected to Washington, you know, the premier city, the capital city in the United States, and there's a lot of, in the greater DC area, there are many people, but all the elite, intelligent administrators and lawyers and etc. are also staying there. So they weren't so happy, but anyway, he got elected. And then he was caught for selling cocaine, doing cocaine and selling cocaine, the mayor. So he got sent to jail for 4 years. Huh? Yeah, only four. He had contacts in the jail and outside. So then he ran for mayor again. And again he got elected. So there was a press conference afterwards, and he said, "I understand that some of you are disturbed by my getting elected. And Major General Rodman said that actually, whatever you think about Marion Barry, but he's actually not only an inveterate politician, a very seasoned expert politician, but he's also the master of understatement. In other words, by saying that people were upset by the fact that he got elected a second time was an understatement. People were furious. So he said, well, I've got some advice for you. And then there was dead silence. All the photographers stopped clicking their cameras. You could hear a pin drop. He leaned forward on the podium and said, just get over it. Everybody went wild in the room. It was the most flippant thing that you could say. You know, just, it was so wild, given his history. You know, just get over it, ignore it, get on with your business. And Rodman said, but actually I agreed with him that, and he went on to tell his the purpose of his lecture about how he was speaking on health care and we're fighting about small things. And, you know, he talked about right to life and all that kind of thing. Whereas he said that the American healthcare system is bulging to such an extent that by the year 2020, every American tax dollar will simply go towards paying off the interest on the budget deficit, the huge multi-trillion dollar budget that we borrow from other countries. But anyway, my point to the kids was that whatever problems you feel you've had, that's fine, try to do something about it, but get on with your lives. Don't waste your time. Time is passing. Just get over it and get on with it. So in order to do that, we need to manage our time properly. And something I appreciated very much, I took two courses. Not only I took the courses, I got sponsors, but I also became a facilitator, which is an extra set of courses, quite expensive, for the Seven Habits, which there's a lot of good stuff there in relationship building and personality building and a lot of good material. But I also took something which we called First Things First. Now it's called Dealing with the Most Important Thing. But First Things First, or the most important thing, is how to manage your time so that your time doesn't manage you. You get time to do those things which matter most. For example, in preaching, invariably, if you go out and distribute books or make life members or do college preaching or any kind of preaching, and you're inviting people to come, one of the most common answers is, I don't have time. And it kind of blows my mind a little bit, because we all have the same amount of time. It's not like, you know, some get 24 hours a day, some get 26, some get 28, you know. You have the same time as I do, but you choose not to make it a priority to come to the temple. You choose to not make it a priority to come to the seminar. You choose You have the choice to choose what are your priorities in your life. Now, there are three kinds of people that experience time or that deal with the material world. One type of person just kind of watches things happen. They don't never do much in their life. Maybe they're satisfied, or maybe they just feel themselves, most often they just feel themselves incapable of dealing with the waves of changes that are going on in our lives. Material nature is endlessly changing, mutable, in the Bhagavad Gita. So there are those who just watch things go by. And then there are those who get out there and they make things happen in their life. They're proactive. Call it what you may, trite or overused or whatever. But the fact is, some people don't wait for things to happen to them. They don't wait for time to act on them and control them. But they actually get out there and make plans and do things. And it's amazing how much of a difference it can make. So there are those who watch things happen, those who make things happen, and then there are those who wonder, what happened? So, given those three choices, it's best to be a proactive person who takes... There was a man who wrote... His name was Nathan Hill, Napoleon Hill. He wrote a book which was a bestseller for so many years. Take charge of your time and your life. All you have in your life is basically your time. You don't have anything, or the most essential thing is you have so many number of breaths, so many years to live, and that's it. The exam's over, time's up, put your pen down. You're finished. So, take charge of your time and your life. If you're intelligent, you'll write things down, and there are four kind of quadrants which will help you to quantify things and put things in their proper place. Just think of a quadrant. See? Matrix. How many of you saw the Matrix? Yeah. That's a good And I'm really impressed with your honesty, because a lot of places they won't. Maybe Lakshmi Moni took you to see it, right? But. Yeah. Yeah. But it's if you kind of transcend that, the interesting point is it shows that Maya is like us, a virtual reality which we project ourselves into, and we ought to get out of the matrix. And of course it's not that we're going to have to eat that gruel soup that they eat all the time. So this matrix, the first quadrant, you put things there that are in your life that are urgent and important. You can't avoid them. They're urgent, and they're actually important. Like, for example, we're sitting here peacefully. You know, you've got your belongings in the rooms here somewhere. You know, a lot of the things you have. You know, all of a sudden, there's a big fire. It's both urgent and important. that we get out of the house quickly. That's urgent and important. Or even a telephone, sometimes telephone calls ring. You can't ignore a telephone ringing. You know, take a gun, shoot it or something. I don't know, maybe you're... But mostly we want to answer the telephone because it's usually something important in our lives. So you'll find that about 80 to 90% of our activities are in that quadrant, urgent and important. And these are called crises. And one who bases his life upon that is called a crisis manager. All he's doing is urgent and important things. So the problem is that he slips sometimes into quadrant three. Here's one, two, four, three, and four on the bottom. So from one you could go to three. That is urgent but not important. It looks just like urgent and important, but it's actually not important in your life. If you didn't do it, your life would not be finished. You could delegate it to someone else, or you could just not do it, and it won't be the end of the day. It's not so important. It's urgent. It's calling on you. But, and then there's quadrant four. That's not urgent and not important. Like going to the Matrix movie, or reading Time magazine, or watching mindless television. Things, and these things are admitted by everyone across the board, except for those who are in the deepest modes of ignorance. So many responsible adults now restrict themselves and their family members from certain kinds of television that have no utility or benefit, except for the producer, and he's trying to attract you to buy something. So those are not urgent and not important. And what happens is when you get burned out from quadrant one, you know, you slip into quadrant four. You know, you're just so fried. You slip into quadrant four. You just want to waste a little time. But quadrant two is so neglected. What is quadrant two? Important but not urgent. Okay, you've gone through this before, I guess, no? Your mom? Yeah. It's I've seen it, it's pretty much true because I've taught it for the last 10 years or more. And I've seen that the second generation of devotee managers are very hip. It's the old fogies like me who are, you know, can't teach an old dog new tricks, you know. Well, these are not new ideas. It's just common sense. And I can tell you one of the most uncommon things in the world is what? What's one of the most uncommon things in the world? Common sense. Yeah. So these are things which are just common sense. And quadrant four, quadrant two is things that are very important in many ways, but they're not urgent, so they don't get done. What are some of those things? Relationship building. Covey talks about a couple that he was asked to counsel at a seminar he was doing in California on the beach somewhere. Not on the beach, but at a resort. You know. He charged his whole... Anyway, so... Wouldn't do it on a beach. So some resort in California. Anyway, the one wealthy entrepreneur wanted him to talk to his wife, and so Covey found some time and the guy brought him into a restaurant, I guess it was, and might have been a bar, I don't know. Anyway, they were sitting down at a table, and Covey sat down, and they began to explain their positions, and it was like, Steve, my wife and I, we've kind of come to the conclusion that it's not there anymore. We just don't love each other, and there's something gone stale. Could you, try to help us out? And, it became a thing. Let me show you how it is, Stephen. Marge, I've given you everything. I've worked really hard, and you've got a nice house, and we have a lot of cars, and you have all the clothes you need. So what's the problem? Well, it's I can't express it. It's just not, the mood is not right. Could you be a little more specific, Marge? And it goes on like that, right brain versus left brain, Mars and Venus or whatever. And I know all of you have read that book. No. What is that book? I haven't read it either. Men Are from Mars. Anyway, basically it's saying that, we're psychologically, to the extreme, we're a little different, and in varying degrees in the middle, we cross over. Some women are more logical than men, and some men are more emotional than women. But in general, women tend to be more conceptual, more conscious of subtleties. And, someone was telling me, Kirtirash was telling me how he and his wife went to some place. Where was it? They went to some place, and maybe it was in Mexico, some island in the South Pacific or something, and they were in this restaurant, and, nice restaurant. I think they had one of those guys playing, at every table, and, the lamps. So there was a beautiful bouquet of flowers, and I think it was her birthday, and his thought was, oh, wow, that bouquet of flowers would be really beautiful for the deities, She got furious because she thought it was for her birthday. So then he found out, and so then he took one of them roses and gave it to her. Later, anyway, it was pretty funny. They were both there. They were laughing. But the natures are a little different, so they tried to explain, and Covey finally said to the guy, he said, well, you say it's not there anymore, so why don't you love her? And he said, well, you just don't understand, Stephen, it's not there, it's gone. The feeling is gone. So why don't you love her? No, you don't understand. Interesting thing is that love is both a noun and a verb. It's also a verb. In other words, to build relationships, you have to work at it. You have to plan it. Supposing you have someone, a friend, or someone who's junior to you, or someone who's senior to you, and you'd like to be closer to them for any number of various reasons, or just because you want to have friends, you like to live life. I like to live life through friends. All the troubles I've been through in my life, and most recently the last couple of years, what I'm facing now, I get by with a little help from my friends. I really do. Whatever I've got left, it's because of my friends. So you got to plan, and that's in quadrant two. You've got to make an appointment. You got to spend quality time with that person. But I just don't have time, so we never do it, and we never build relationships with people. we just expect that they'll happen spontaneously, you know. He walked around the corner. There she was, and their eyes focused, and there was electricity, and he walked around the corner, and his best friend to be appeared there, and that's Hollywood. It's not real life. Real life is relationships are hard because, you know, other people just see when the closer the relationship gets, the more intimate it gets, the more contempt comes out, the more chance there is for, if you're not properly prepared, the more chance there is for divorce or separation or annulment. We prove that, or for one country to, you know, fight with another, or for men to be the most humane, inhumane, murderous, heinous, to commit such crimes, inconceivable. Because people don't take the time to be empathic. They don't take the time to share Dadati, Pratigranati, Guyamakyati, Prichati. So true from the Upadeshamrita. So true in loving relationships. These things are real. Try them. Each one of them. Experiment. Do it. And you'll see. But it takes time. It takes time to take care of your health. What do people do in this world? They neglect their health. They've got to make money. It's tough out there. Rat race. Dog eat dog. Get ahead. Do unto others before they do it to you. The Bible. A little bit different version. So you get a lot of money. You get a lot of money, and but you spoiled your health. And so in your old age, you have to spend all your money trying to put your health back together. Whereas if you just took a little trouble now, and really it's not about doing, you know, we're raised in the consciousness of more is better. It's not. Quality is better. More can come, and I think it will come, but it should, the foundation should be quality. But that comes in quadrant two. Taking care of your, taking the time to take care of your health, or planning your life. You know, sitting for half an hour every day and planning your day, planning your week. Spending on Sunday, spending an hour, go out in the, you know, some nice place in the forest or some place where you can have quiet time. You can be with yourself, enjoy nature. Commune with God and plan. What are your roles in your life? What are your goals in each role? How are you going to push them forward? What do you want at the end of your life? What are your short-term goals? Say 1 year and the next year I hope to achieve this. And 5 years I hope to achieve this. And 20 years. You don't have to deal with all that. But you certainly have to deal with the immediate stuff, and it's good to have a plan. That takes time, but it works. It's successful technology. And the reason I started with, you know, Email Anonymous is a lot of that is in quadrant four. Hey, I'm known as the technology guru. I got that nickname. I got a few nicknames throughout my life, but one of them was, you know, I always have half a dozen gadgets, right? I always got gadgets, toys. And I took computer engineering in school. I was probably one of the, after Pratyatosh, I was probably one of the first ones to utilize computers in ISKCON in a big way in the 80s when luggables, they didn't have notebooks or laptops. They have these luggables, which are, you know, this big, and carried them around. I smuggled one into India, and and I used it to organize a direct mail program, which I used for Food for Life, and to this day we collect millions of dollars with that program that I set up using computers. And it had even more far-reaching capabilities, but unfortunately no one's been able to take it beyond that money stage. You can actually organize a lot. Prabhupada said, and these, you know, these are things that I heard personally, because he gave a lot of time in India to manage his projects, but he said that we could hire people to do so many things in our project, to cook, to run the guest house. He said, but a devotee's business is to utilize that facility for preaching and teaching and carrying on spiritual relationships with people. It's not that we don't know how to use technology, we can, but like the snake and the mouse, you know, utility is the principle. So I encourage all of you, you know, right now you're young, some of you are getting older, and you're going to have to live in the real world at a certain period of your life. Either, well, you'll have to deal with so many things. One of them may be marriage, if that's in your cards, or certainly it's going to have to be a job and dealing with people who have a different worldview than you, and how are you going to interface with them. There's so many decisions that you have yet to make, and you may even change your mind two or three or half a dozen or more times as you experience. It's not going to be that easy, but it'll be a lot easier if you have a plan for your life. And the problem is, what really happens is there's some things like, I've seen devotees who, you know, really all they wanted to be was a painter for Krishna, or they wanted to write poetry for Krishna. They had, you know, secret desires that they really wanted to do. And because they're part of a mission, or even they're not part of the mission, they're just part of a family, or they're part of the need to keep the machine going, and, you know, you have to have money. There are no two ways about it, unless you're prepared to live in the forest and eat herbs and fruits and roots. And that would be great. If you're ready for that, go for it. But I don't think you'll last long. So you're going to have to make decisions, and if you have a constitution, basically a mission statement or a vision statement or a game plan, a constitution for your life, and the focus, the main thing is, through all these things, I want to spend time painting for Krishna, and I'm going to factor it into my weekly life. I'll write it down and make sure it gets done. That's the only way it's going to get done. If you just practice laissez-faire, catch-as-catch-can, you know, go with the flow, as, you know, Gone with the Wind. No, that's another one. If you just, you know, if you don't make any plan, you're going to find that at the end of your life, there was so much that you really wanted to do, but you just didn't get time to do it. So try to avoid quadrant four as much as possible. It's for your benefit. try to connect with those things which are going to bring you fulfillment, happiness, peace of mind, satisfaction. Okay. I know Krishna's forced me into this position, and I'm glad he did, because I find a lot of satisfaction just talking with devotees like yourself and just sharing ideas. It's the main theme in my mission statement. I have a mission statement. I've had a couple. It's changed in the last couple of years a lot, but still I get a lot of pleasure talking with all of you. Anybody has any comments or questions? Yes, Monty.
One of the people that planning your life and, you know, like organizing your life and kind of getting in control of your life and seeing Krishna acting through your life.
No, there's never any conflict. You build that into your mission statement. In other words, he had monies in there that he had to spend. It was a trust, so every year there was some money to spend. It had to be spent. So he had different leaders in India in charge of different projects. Some of them were bigger projects, some of them were smaller projects. And I saw him as the president of Calcutta, and I saw him in Bombay, and I saw him in Vrindavan. He would be there, and his leaders would come to meet him. And someone would say, you know, Srila Prabhupada, I need 20 lakhs. I think I want to do some project. I think it'll be success. So Prabhupada would consider. Then another devotee would come in and say, Prabhupada, I need 25 lakhs, and I've made this report about the project, and I've done this and this, and this is really going to be good. I've done a little survey, and there's a lot of public response to this. Prabhupada would, even this first guy may have been a bigger project or something, but he knew this man was enthusiastic. He walked the extra mile to make a presentation to Prabhupada and show him how it would be successful. He would give his money there. So you have to show Krishna that you're actually interested in going back to Godhead. You can't just, you know, say, you know, Krishna, I want to come back to Godhead. What's next? You know, here's my cell phone number. You know. You've got to actually make a plan how you're going to execute sadhana and how you're going to serve him and what you're going to do. You shouldn't be attached to that, but you're part of your devotion to Krishna is making that plan. And if Krishna likes it, he'll fulfill it. If he likes what you're doing, your efforts. I've seen in my life wherever I've had some project, big projects, and I've been in charge of big. The Bombay project alone is like a zone. And there's a lot. I mean, it looks like, wow, this place is great. It runs on autopilot. Everything's super. But behind the scenes, stay for a week or two, you know, you'll see behind the scenes there's a lot of headache, a lot of problems. And there's maybe half a dozen or 10 or 15 devotees who've been there for 15 years and dedicated themselves to the project. So that's why things go on. And there is a plan, and there's meetings regularly to adjust the plan. You've got to make plans. But just don't be attached to the plan. Your ultimate plan is to make Radharani notice you. Plan making also engenders commitment. It elicits, it draws out from you more and more commitment. And commitment turns around. There was a, I keep forgetting his name. Brain fog again. Some German philosopher. Come on, tell me. No, not Schopenhauer, but the, along that genre. No, not Nietzsche. No. Quite a common name. Anyway, it's also attributed to Sir Edmund Hillary, who was the leader. Goethe. Yeah. You've all heard of Goethe, right? Anyway, you may have to face him if you go on to college. You may have to know the name, either in English literature or in philosophy, or very famous. So Goethe said that there's only one thing. There's no other thing that is such an obstacle to achieving our objectives as a lack of commitment. But when one positively commits oneself to some endeavor, all manner of facilities and encouragement and so many things seem to just fall into place. They come your way that you never could have imagined would happen when you fix your mind, you focus on it, and you commit yourself. So if you create a plan to serve Krishna and commit yourself to it, after you've gone over it a number of times, you've made sure it's coming from your heart, you maybe have a mentor or someone that you deeply trust and that they agree to review your mission statement with you, and then finally you're sure this is it and you commit yourself to it, you'll be surprised how much you can achieve. In other words, if one of you wants to become the President of the United States, the first Hare Krishna woman to become President of the United States, if you fix your mind on it, commit yourself to it, make a plan to do it, forget it, it'll never happen. No, you can do it. You can do it. You can actually do it, because Krishna will drive your chariot. Krishna will assist you. I believe it. I really believe that you can fulfill your dreams, but you can't be wishy-washy about it. You have to be focused, committed. And, you know, the best thing is that you commit yourself to becoming a great devotee. You can be a great devotee Brahmin, or you can be a great devotee Kshatriya. In other words, you can be a great devotee as the president, or whatever it is you want to do, whatever insurmountable task you have. But if you believe in it and you want to honestly, and I'm talking, you know, the first person you have to stop cheating is yourself. When you stop trying to cheat Krishna and cheating yourself, then Krishna will stop cheating you. Isn't that nice? Someone told me that the other day. When you stop trying to cheat Krishna, Krishna will stop cheating you. we lie to ourselves, we fool ourselves, we're afraid to open our hearts. You know, some people, they wear their heart on their sleeve, you know, they just see the sada adni fall. Any Indians here? No. Huh? You know Hindi? Hindi aatiye? Huh? So, sida sada admi, jante? You've heard that expression? A very straightforward person. When you become very straightforward, especially with yourself and with others, Vaishnavas are not duplicitous. Then you can actually commit yourself to something with full strength, and you can achieve it. Do it. I mean, for example, and this may sound corny, but I believe it because I'm corny. Mother Lakshmi Moni and Mother Kuti, they had a dream to have a nice academy, and they meditated on it. They dreamt about it, they planned it, and it was a hard struggle, but they got it together. Now Krishna's giving them more and more facility. What I acknowledge is, as I look in the temple, well, anywhere I look, just taking you out of that context, but there's no group of people that I know of who get such loving attention in terms of emotion, maybe secret emotion. They may tell you, they may not tell you. It's not always proper for a teacher to be, fear is sometimes a good teacher a little bit, keeps you in line. My father was a military man, and when I was a teacher, I hated him a little bit. And he had some problems. He was an orphan. But he never said I love him. Never said it once to any of his children. That hurt. I left home. But he, when I was in home, he made sure that I had a classic education. Took Latin and French in high school 4 or 5 years. I was not a Boy Scout, I was in the cadets, Army cadets, and that was a disciplined life, and he always trained me in that way. He was far more intelligent materially than I am. He was one of those people who could remember anything he had read 5 years before, quoted verbatim, very brilliant like that. I appreciate what he gave me now, because it's made my life. Prabhupada, on a number of occasions, I was still a brahmachari, but in Bombay, he'd say, "Oh, Sridhar Swami has come." He would be preaching, some satsang or something. He referred to me. Sridhar Swami. I'm Prabhupada. Mr. Brahmachari, remember me? I guess he had some plan, and it's kind of natural. So they have given so much affection to you and are taking you all over the world. I don't know of any school group that goes with their teachers to the many places that you've been to. Or maybe not this group, but other groups that take it. They're really committed to you. You're lucky in that way. It may sound a little corny, but I think it's real. I found out how you can, all you need is a little chutzpah and a little bit of acting ability and a few drinks under your belt, and you can be charming with anyone. I was terribly shy when I was as a kid, very shy. So when I first started drinking, you know, which was late, I was a late starter. I played too many sports. I didn't have time. We lament, you know, things we missed out on. Anyway, I found when I would drink, I turned into a totally different animal. You know, I could, you know, pull the wool over anyone's eyes. I could compete. But after a while, I got really tired of it. It was so dull. It was just the alcohol that made my personality. I found in my life, especially in devotional service, that even there are awkward moments of communication, embarrassing moments, moments where you have to apologize or this or that, but it's far sweeter. It's deeper, it's sweeter, it's real. I know, I had a teacher in school, in high school, Al Staples. Yeah, he was really a nice guy. I was always a troublemaker in school because I was going through trauma. I was always a practical joker, too. You know, I was supposed to be in this, like, it was a good school. It was an upper crust school, and this was an advanced class. And I was always waste. I was always in, at least once a week, I was in the principal's office to get the strap, you know. And if I got it in the principal's office, I would get it at home too, you know. But he was really good with me. He spent a lot of quality time with me. I didn't appreciate it then, but he saved me. So there's an example of commitment. Mother Lakshmi Mohan Kuti. Any questions? You always ask all the questions. Okay, go ahead. Your spiritual life, yeah, that is one of the things that people don't give. They can put it off. Anything you can put off because there's some emergency that you have to deal with. The interesting thing is if you put into your schedule those quadrant two things that are important but not urgent, you make sure you spend time in them, they'll reduce your quadrant one activities. Because I what?
He was starting to feel, he didn't like to live in a place where he felt guilty because he wasn't.
Oh, this was in 87.
Yeah. Do you remember that?
It was a very bad year for blowing bubbles. you know that song?
I'm there blowing bubbles.
Yeah, oh, it was a very good year. Anyway. But I'll bet you that those peers who are busy doing number one, A, they could benefit from a little number two themselves, and B, they're working so that you'll have time to develop in number two so that you'll do better than they have, because a father always likes to see, or a mother always likes to see her daughter do better than her. It gives her pride. So, Yeah, you know, I'm saying this, but, you know, my favorite instruction from Prabhupada was, well, somebody's practicing unimportant, you know, it's the phone, right? Do the needful, whatever has to be done. So, I would say another thing is also we're workaholics, we're work junkies, and we've been scripted in that. And maybe I can teach it, but I may not be so good at following it, but I recognize the veracity of it. I really do. And wherever I have followed my own advice, I've always seen a better result. So, yeah, I hear you. I hear you. I think you should feel guilty. Yeah. The person who attracted me to Krishna consciousness, or at least it wasn't Jayananda, was my Bhagma Pradarshan, but later on I had the association of a devotee named Chidananda. Did you know him? Yeah. I mean, he was the epitome of not exactly mismanagement, because I would say no management. Yeah. And he was such a humble, kind of sweet guy. You know. He was the only guy I ever saw who would give a class with his head down the whole time. You know, he was just very, and I was just magnetically attracted. He's so humble, I figured. You know. So, the temple went on. Somehow things got done what needed to be done. Now, I'm not saying that the leader should just, you know, space out, tune out. Certainly there's things that have to be done. But Prabhupada is an example. He would always find time for things that, you know, were important. So I do think that you, because you said we, but I think you were referring you, feel guilty. And I think all of us who are, you know, hopefully the next generation will come up and take over from us so that we can get out and take Vanaprastha or Sannyas or whatever it is. What the need of the hour is, just wholesome, intelligent preachers, people, experienced people who know the rules and regulations, know how to bend them but not break them, with the people they're preaching to. They, you know. I think it's time to end the class. That phone keeps ringing. Did you have somebody call up on purpose? Or? Yeah. So I think we could learn a lot more and do a lot better if we just started to focus more on quality. And you know, I travel with my, where I'm supposed to be resting, I'm supposed to be, and you know, he has his responsibilities which he takes care of. And there's so many other things that need to be done while traveling. And I'll give you an example. Here's a good example how I'm sort of changing. I made an appointment to give a little talk this evening in Gainesville after the Harina. And then this morning I got an invitation from Ambarish this evening at his house. And I just thought, well, you know, it might be beneficial to rub noses with the big time, but I'm not going to do it because, you know, I made a commitment to the devotees who are going on Harinam, and that means a lot to me. Well, and before, you know, I would think, you know, wow, I'll have to, you know, fudge this, I'll have to, you know, get someone else to do it, or, you know, I'm not as strong as Jayapataka Maharaj, but, you know, I'll try to have three programs, you know. But I can't do it, and I don't want to do it. Some people, Sridhar Maharaj, he once gave a speech where he said Swami Maharaj is like an ocean. Oh, Bhakti Rakshak. Bhakti Rakshak. Sridhar Goswami. Sridhar Dave Goswami. One of Prabhupada's more intimate and very elevated persons. That's why it's very bewildering to me. I've got like two very famous Sridhar Swamis in our line. It was the original Sridhar Swami. And even Bhakti Rakshak was considered the most, you know, for a long time, the most elevated person in the Gaudiya Mutt after Bhakti Siddhanta's disappearance. He was born in a Brahmin family and sadhu all his life. Fluent in English and very excellent preacher. But he just, you know, he didn't make it part of his mission statement to come to the West. So I'm like in really somewhere. I have to keep remembering and telling people that, you know, I don't know how I got this name, but, you know, I can't compare with these gentlemen. But what were we talking about? Yeah, Sridhar Maharaj, he gave a talk and he said, yeah, Prabhupada was like an ocean and I'm like a small pond. But we are both doing the same work. So nobody should think that you have to do something big before you're important in Krishna's eyes. If you get chosen, then rise to the occasion. Allow Krishna to empower you. Prabhupada was not considered a very important person in the Gaudiya Mutt. He was just another Grihastha, a Vai Babu, whose business had failed. But when it came time, Krishna had a plan for him, and Bhaktisiddhanta even said, he will do in his time. So, even if you never do anything big in your life, even if you just raise a family, that's a huge responsibility. I saw something somewhere. Somebody wrote that if you think it's been a struggle being a student in Gurukul, just imagine what it's like, how much struggle it's been being a teacher in Gurukul. being a parent is, whoo. I've seen so many nice devotees who are totally just in a state of sort of bewilderment. You know, they always thought that their little demigod children would all become pure devotees and fly off back to Godhead, and, you know. And now, you know, their kids are, after so much investment, working hard, training, the kids want to do something else. And I said, well, look at Prabhupada. He had five children. none of them turned out to be sadhakas. So you've got to invest, you've got to love your children. The best way to capture your children is to smother them with love, not with a pillow. Smother them with love. And someday they'll remember that my best friend is my mom and my dad. And they'll, if they don't follow you now, someday they may follow, or at least they'll appreciate and they'll carry something with them. But you have to have that detachment. You have to have that faith. You have to go forward with that feeling, that confidence. But even if you do a simple thing like that nicely, that's a huge thing you just did. Or you maybe become a GBC or an international minister or this or that or whatever, teacher. It doesn't matter. Whatever you like to do, be satisfied and happy doing your best for Krishna. And don't get in anxiety about size and volume. Work on your own quality, that's all. Okay, I think I have to go. I'm sorry.
Okay. I like to set goals for myself, so I usually do, but then sometimes I forget to appreciate what I'm doing now or being in the moment or whatever. So, do you have any suggestions for that?
It's good to write things down. Focus on it, even if you have a small, see your diary. Oh yeah, okay. I mean, this is small. I have a bigger one, because I have a much bigger ego, so you know, he's my disciple. I can't have a smaller diary than him. But, you know, he keeps his, what a mess. There's room for roles and goals, and as you plan your day, this is the, there's a 6-step process in the Covey organization that you can go over quickly in your planning, your weekly planning. Usually he recommends plan your life a week at a time rather than every day, because the vision of one day is not big enough. You have to look in terms of a week and then look at your mission statement and go over it and follow that 6-step plan and then write things into your week in spots. And they're adjustable, but more or less they're there, and you try to follow them and then carry that around with you. And I mean, the problem is we don't, and I say we because I mean all of we don't have much brain. Opa made us up. We can't remember. That's why we have books. Formerly didn't need books, they could remember, we can't remember. So an important thing like this, like I said, the studies show that students that had written goals, they kept their minds focused and they achieved the most, both qualitatively and quantitatively. If you want to have a good life, then take the time to plan. And please write it down. If I get better and I live through this period, then I'll come back and I'll teach you a full time management seminar. If you're still here, if you haven't graduated.
Someone will be here.
You'll be here. Or I'll teach it anywhere. I think it's really important. Yes?
Okay.
loudly. Only one? Like it here? Do you like it here? Well, wherever you go, you like it, so be happy with that. Doesn't matter. Just do it. Commit yourself, and if Krishna changes your venue, or commit yourself to principles, certain principles, like try to find out one thing that you're doing in every place, no matter where you are, and see if you can develop that. In other words, I'll bet if you were really fixed in the idea that you wanted to be in the Vaishnav Girls Academy in Alachua, then Krishna would help you make arrangements to stay here beyond all problems. Or if you really liked being in Sweden, where were you in Sweden? Korsnäs. You were translating? Huh? Okay. Okay, so if you had really liked coarseness and you were really in, you know, really just in love with Gandharvika Giridhari, then they would have kept you there. There's no obstacle that Krishna can't overcome for his devotee. Counting on it. But one way to do it is just to focus on things that you do everywhere. But there's, you know, if you like wherever you are, then it doesn't matter how many times you change. Just commit yourself wherever you are and be detached, be prepared to change. But if you really think you should stay in one place, well, there's one solution, but I'm not going to recommend it because sometimes I get in trouble. I mean, you could get married. How many of you are happy to be alive? Okay, well, you got to admit that somebody committed to a relationship and therefore you're here. So maybe you should give that chance to other spirit souls and do as good or better job than your parents did. Try it out. How easy it is.